This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We bring in now John Campbell. He's at Johnny Oddshark on Twitter. Maybe he's got four or five other Twitter accounts as well. John Campbell, when you saw that Philadelphia 76ers story about Colangelo and the multiple burner accounts, did it surprise you? Or are you like, yeah, I totally assume that everything on Twitter is fake?
I don't assume everything on Twitter is fake, but you can't be surprised by things like that. It's anything on social media you have to take with a grain of salt and be a little bit careful. But there's so much good information out there too. You can use it really well and use it to your advantage. I don't get the whole fake account thing, but it doesn't surprise me.
This is where I have too much of an ego. I can't imagine, whether you love me or hate me, somebody else getting credit for my opinions. So the last thing I'm going to do is create a burner account and share opinions that otherwise I would be sharing. I'm like, I want the criticism or the blame for whatever opinion I've got. I'm not going to give it to somebody else, some other account. And that's also the benefit, by the way, of being able to say exactly what you think. I understand that some people in positions of prominence can't share their actual opinions and maintain their jobs. So that in and of itself is, it's also a mess. All right, let's talk. We got the NHL Stanley Cup Finals going on, and we have got the NBA. Let's start with the NBA. Is this the most prohibitive favorite you can remember seeing in the last 25 years? I saw you guys at Oddshark put out the data on, for instance, the Warriors, I believe, are a 12-point favorite Thursday night's game one, tomorrow night's game one. That's one of the biggest favorites you've got in your entire database, right?
Yeah, it ties as the biggest favorite we've ever seen in an NBA Finals, and that ties with the Sixers-Lakers Finals of 2001, where the Sixers were 12-point underdogs going into that one. The Sixers actually won that game, by the way. They lost the series 4-1, but they won that one. So that might intrigue Cavs bettors a little bit. But the Warriors, huge, huge favorites here, minus 1,100 or 1,200, even as high as minus 1,300 to win this series going into it. So they are heavy, heavy favorites.
Minus 1,300 would equate to what from a percentage basis? When somebody says, because I think there's people out there listening to us right now, they hear, and I'm not saying exactly, but roughly, when people hear minus 1,300, that doesn't necessarily register in their head. We're talking like 90-some-odd percent favorite, right?
Yeah, exactly. Is it like 92 to 94% when we're talking about odds that high? And that's the implied odds. And I don't pay too much attention to the implied odds, except when it's series prices like this. It helps you judge a little bit whether teams are overpriced or underpriced.
Yeah, there's no doubt at all about that. Okay, so how do you play this series if you're gambling from your perspective on the NBA Finals?
Well, I really think from game one here, odds makers are trying to attract Cavs money, and I think they're going to get it. I think there's just going to be a ton of public money out there, as there always is for the NBA Finals, and a lot of that public money is going to be on LeBron. So I like to side with the books in these situations. It's not a guarantee, but I'm looking at the Warriors here. The biggest factor coming into game one is the Warriors' injury situation with Iguodala. We don't know what his status is going to be. Even Draymond Green, he had a bad sprained ankle from game seven. So that's a really bad combination for the Warriors. So I'm a little nervous of game one. I'll be looking at the Warriors throughout the series here to take them. And Faves have been doing really, really well in the NBA playoffs. They've been covering at about 59%. So I'll be leaning to the Warriors, but I'll be keeping a close eye on those injuries.
LeBron James in the finals, how has he been as just a blind bettor? If you were just like, you know what, I love LeBron, I think he's going to play well, how has he handled himself?
Actually, not very well when we're talking about betting terms, and that might surprise a lot of people. He's 18 and 23 straight up, but against the spread, LeBron James is only covered at 44% in the finals, 17, 22, and 1. So not a great bet. He's an even worse bet as an underdog, so I would say be careful here with the Cavs in game one. He's only covered at 36% as an underdog in the finals, so oddsmakers know that too, so just be careful in game one here.
If you hadn't paid attention to anything other than the over-under, and if you had blindly bet the under throughout the entirety of the NBA playoffs, how would you be doing, and do you expect that to continue in the NBA finals?
You'd be doing very well, actually. The over-under is 35-43, so 43 unders throughout the playoffs. That would be a profit of over $400 if you were betting $100 per game. I'm not sure for the finals here. I'm actually looking over in the finals. Last year between these teams, we saw the highest scoring finals ever. We saw 236 points per game, which was the highest scoring finals ever by 25 points. So I'd be careful if you're just looking to keep riding the under. And these things usually even out over the course of a playoff. So I'll actually be looking to be over game to game in the finals.
All right, let's go to the Stanley Cup final between Vegas and the Capitals. Vegas is now a -240 favorite. They won game one, 6-4. I believe game two is happening tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Do you believe that Vegas should be a prohibitive favorite in this series? What do you see going forward?
Yeah, I think that line is about right here now, and winning game one is huge. The team that wins game one wins the finals around 70% of the time. So that number is just about right. But I think this series might go the distance, seven games. So I think we will see some value in the Capitals as we go further. I think game one was an anomaly. We saw, 10 goals in game one here. I'm really liking the under now throughout the series, and that's probably what I'll play game to game throughout this. I think just game one, things got a little bit crazy. And I think we'll see things tighten up. Two good goalies, two good defensive teams when they want to be, and we'll see things get lower scoring. The finals tend to be unders. 64% over the last 10 years, we've seen the under come in the finals for an average of under 5 goals per game. So I think we'll see some undervalue, and this series isn't done. If you want to bet the Caps game to game, I think it'd be a good way to go moving forward.
How do you handle empty nets? I mean, this is the crazy thing to me about betting on the NHL in general, is that these empty net goals can so often swing things, and it's rare in any other sport to have a situation like this. I guess at the end of a football game, you could have a lateral type situation, which happens every now and then, where a team's trying to prolong a play. Other team picks it up and scores. But empty nets are so common in the NHL and empty net goals in general. Is there any way to protect yourself against these?
Well, right now you really have to handicap the empty netter, because we've seen 35 of these NHL playoffs, and that's absolutely huge. We only saw 8 in all of last year's playoffs, so about double this year. And you really have to be careful when you're betting the puck line, and that empty netter, as we saw with 4 seconds left in the last game, covers that number. So the against the spread record is 30-50 for favorites right now. If you bet favorites, though, you'd be up about three and a half units, or over $300. And the thing with the empty net goals is teams are pulling their goalies way earlier than they used to historically. So 2-3 minutes, they're not afraid to pull their goalies now. And the rule used to be 1 minute. That's when teams would pull their goalies. So I think you want to look to the favorites. I don't love taking puck line favorites, but right now I've had to change my mentality. And you want to look to the favorite and lay that -1.5 goals, because teams are just finding ways to get that empty netter. And books are hating it, because that comes in at big plus money.
The Vegas Golden Knights started off the season at 500-1. Is this the best gambling story that you can remember in terms of people having tickets that could really pay off in a big way? I know Leicester City was 5,000-1 in the English Premier League a couple of years ago, but in American pro sports, can you remember an underdog story like this?
Yeah, not even close, really. Not in North American sports. But yeah, 200-1, 500-1. Books are on the hook in Las Vegas for single bets, single payouts, anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000. So we've never really had anything like this. I really think this is the best betting story in major pro sports we've ever seen in North America.
Good stuff as always, John Campbell. We will talk to you next week, and follow John at Johnny Oddshark on Twitter. Good luck gambling this week, my man.
Thanks, Clay. You too.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Man, I got to tell you, a lot of you sending pictures of your kids with Ariel from Ariel's Grotto at Disney World and Disneyland. We're going to bring in Jeff Schwartz. But one of the guys out there, and he's got an anonymous Twitter account, I think. I'm trying to pull up my my Twitter account right now. At Chef Boutwell just tweeted a picture of him having taken a picture of Ariel. No kid in it. Where does that rank on the creepy scale to be at Disney World, stand in line for Ariel's grotto, and then get a picture of Ariel with nobody else in it? I think it would have been better to get your picture yourself, but just to take a picture of Ariel, you're like, you see a guy, there's like a 25-minute wait to see Ariel. Finally, you get to the front of the line, Ariel's sitting there, and she's like, okay, do you have a kid? He's like, no, I just stood in line. Can I just get your picture, please? That's all-time level creepy. Jeff Schwartz, can you imagine doing that?
It's not Brian Colangelo's Twitter account that's sending you these pictures. Maybe he had a kid and then just decided to take a picture without the kid really quick. But if you're standing in line for that long, 20, 25, 45 minutes, I know at Disneyland was a 45-minute wait to see Mickey. That's beyond creepy.
That's amazing. Now, your daughter, we can hear in the background there, you've been to Disney World, Disneyland. How would you break down the greatest of all time Disney princesses? Who's the hottest?
I have not been to Disney World, Disneyland. Okay, we have Ariel Emerson. I'm on the phone, babe. We have...
Ask her. Ask her which of the Disney princesses is her favorite.
Who's your favorite Disney princess? Yeah, princess. He says, I don't like princesses. So there's... He said he likes Mickey Mouse. So he's okay. He's got Christmas... It's not good for the conversation. So we have what, Snow White, Ariel, who else? Who are my choices?
Our two nominees right now are Jasmine versus Ariel is the hottest, Jasmine, greatest of all time.
I think I have not seen Ariel in a while, but Jasmine, that's a good call. I would never thought about that. That's a good call. I'm gonna go with Jasmine on this one.
Going Jasmine. It's a tough debate. It is right now. Let me go give you the latest numbers. With roughly 3,000 people voting so far in the first 20 minutes. Ariel, 56% of the vote. Jasmine, 44% of the vote. We were talking to Jeff Schwartz, and his kids are in the background. At Jeff Schwartz, you can follow him on Twitter. Do you, like, now that it's the NFL offseason, do you think there's any story other than the anthem that anybody cares about right now? I think the NFL needs to create a scandal, something other than the anthem, so people can talk about football. Because I was asking the guys off air, I'm like, what NFL story is out there? And they said, well, Dez Bryant said he would like to play for the 49ers. And then Coop, is Coop on the mic right now? Coop, what did you actually suggest to me as an NFL topic?
Hey, I just said it was a story.
All right, what did you suggest? You said we could talk about this, and then tell me what you said.
I don't know. It was Brandon Marshall signing with the Seahawks is the latest headline.
Yikes. And I said, if I have to talk about Brandon Marshall signing with the Seahawks, and you also said Brandon Marshall is one of the best wide receivers to never play in an NFL playoff game. And I'm like, oh, my God, just shoot me in the head with a nail gun if that's the stories that are going on right now in the NFL. Brandon Marshall not having played in the playoffs.
The funny thing is the NFL did not need to create the anthem story. They've done nothing about it. I think they're hoping that maybe the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals and college softball or whatever else might meet up as soon, I think, that might dominate the headlines. But I don't know what scandal they want to create. I mean, they're not very good at handling scandals. We've seen whether it's a Zeke Elliott incident, anything else, anthem. They just have seemed so out-positioned and out-maneuvered this entire time. It's very unlike NFL. And I don't think I expected the backlash to come so swift from both sides after the anthem, anthem decision. We've seen it from both sides, the people that are upset with, not allowing the players to kneel, and people that are upset the NFL didn't do enough to stop the players. From standing in the tunnel. It's been swift on both sides. And again, another thing that wasn't thought out very well by the NFL.
We've got the NBA Finals set. Are you interested in watching for the fourth straight year the Warriors against the Cavs? Is that good for the NBA? Or would you have been more interested in watching either the Rockets or the Celtics or maybe both advance and get a new matchup?
I was kind of hoping to see the Rockets win that game because I did want to see something a little different. I think that I root for LeBron and I hope he can win, but he's not beating the Warriors. I think the Rockets, he had a maybe chance to beat the Rockets, but he has no chance at all to beat the Warriors. So I'll watch it because I like watching sports and I'm going to gamble on it. It maybe makes a little bit of money to put a future bet on the Cavs at +750. I don't know. It feels like you're throwing away your money. But I'll bet the series, and that's probably why I'll watch it, is to see where the lines end up and if I can win some money. I mean, hell, I bet the WNBA, so I might as well bet the NBA.
Yeah, that's impressive. All right, so if you were LeBron's advisor and he came to you, you grew up in L.A., you know the power of the Lakers and everything else. Where would you tell LeBron to go at the end of the season as part of the decision 3.0?
Well, I think Houston's kind of out. I don't know why he would want to go there. He's not a player who's just going to shoot layups and dunks and shoot threes. I mean, that's not kind of what he is. I think he's seen that Chris Paul is a big linchpin in that organization, and I think he's buddies with Chris Paul, but he gets hurt every year. And can you trust him to be that guy when you need him? Because he needs a sidekick, man. He can't keep playing 48 minutes the rest of his career in big game situations. You look at Philly, I mean, the whole burner account thing is pretty fascinating, and I don't think that Colangelo will be there much longer after this. So that changes the dynamic of that team, I think. But that's a young team that could be fun to play with Simmons and Embiid. I think the Lakers' appeal is Los Angeles, right? He's got a film. I think he's got a film company. He's got a place in Los Angeles already. I believe you said it was kids are enrolled in schools in Los Angeles as well. And it makes sense if he wants to grow his brand, which I think he does. And look, they have a chance to build there. I don't know how long he wants to build, but the way I look at LeBron's legacy now is look, he'll be 3-6 after this finals, right? Jordan was 6-0. We all know that. I don't think he's going to catch Jordan in titles. But what he can say if he goes to, let's say, Los Angeles or the 76ers, more Los Angeles, and say, look, I've now built, and if the Lakers win, I've now built three different, quote-unquote, dynasties at three different spots that really had not had them before, right? He had a championship before he got there, but they didn't have a dynasty, and then he built that club there. He goes to Cleveland, but they've been in the finals 4 years in a row, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they won a championship. And then he goes to Los Angeles, and let's say he built the Lakers up and goes to a couple of finals there, he can say, I was the greatest team builder of all time. I mean, I think that's something that would motivate him to go to Los Angeles.
How many more years do you think he's going to play? He'll turn 34 in how many more years can he play at a high level? Because I don't really see LeBron as the kind of guy who's going to hang around and be, you know, kind of a sixth man or, you know, somebody who's not central to a team's chances. How many more years is it legitimate to believe that he can play at a high level?
I would probably think a couple. Look, the technology and advancements and rehab and getting yourself ready for a game are much different than they were 10, 15, maybe even 5 years ago. So he's able to do things. He spent, I think they said, $2 million a year on his body. And, you know, a lot of people, it's interesting, people say, well, look, if you just take care, young athletes, just take care of your body like LeBron does. You have to have the money to take care of your body. I couldn't afford to pay $2 million a year to take care of my body. And if you have the money, why not do it? So I think he can last longer at this level than most players have in the past. But I just think, I don't know if he wants to. I don't think he wants to play 48 minutes every night to barely give his team a chance to win a game. I think he wants to play 32 minutes. And when it's crunch time, go win us the game, or we're up big and you don't have to, rather than playing this style every single night. He's going to wear down. We saw it with game 5. He looked exhausted by the end of the game. This Warriors series, he's going to be exhausted, man, trying to chase that team around and score enough points to keep him, keep your team in the game. And I think at some point he's going to be over it. I think he can play till kind of however long he wants to play. But to your point, I don't know if he's ever going to want to be just kind of like the shooter who's hanging on and just, coming in for 12 minutes a game. Probably, but I give him 5 years. I don't know if he won't play 5 years at this level, maybe another couple of years. But if he goes to L.A., man, he's in it for the long run. I mean, they're kind of a little bit away from winning a championship. So if he goes there, that signifies that he wants to play another 5 years.
Good stuff as always, Jeff Schwartz. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy the NHL and NBA playoff games.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We bring in Jason Whitlock. Jason, this morning, I don't know if you're aware of what we're debating. We're not doing Michael Jordan versus LeBron James. We are debating the greatest of all time Disney princess. I know you don't have kids, but I'm assuming that at some point in time you have seen some of these Disney movies. Which do you think is the greatest of all time if you had to pick, Ariel or Jasmine?
Don't know either one.
When is the last time that you saw an animated movie?
Does The Simpsons count?
No, The Simpsons is not. When is the last time that you saw, have you ever seen a Disney animated movie as an adult?
You know what I love is the Christmas movies that they come out, the same ones that come out every year.
Like Charlie Brown and Christmas and that stuff?
Yeah. And so it's probably been a couple years since I've seen one of those.
Have you ever been to Disney World or Disneyland?
Oh, absolutely. I went to Disney World as a child. It's one of the greatest trips of my life. First time I ever flew.
So you are at least familiar with the Disney experience from a kid perspective. So how old were you?
Yeah.
All right, we are talking with
Jason.
Don't not an expert on the princesses, so he can't break it down. Jason Whitlock at Whitlock Jason on Twitter. All right, let's go into the world of zaniness. First of all, let's start with that. I don't think we talked to you since the NFL came down with their anthem opinion. In general, what was your thought? What were your thoughts on the NFL's decision as it pertains to the national anthem?
I thought that they tried to make everybody happy and ended up not making anyone happy. And so I wish they had just, said, hey, look, we're going to leave our players in the locker room during the national anthem. Or they should have just said, if you don't stand for the national anthem, you don't play. Period.
Why do you think the NBA requiring its players to stand for the national anthem and stand in a respectful manner, the language in the NFL, I mean the NBA, when it comes to national anthem responsibilities and obligations by a player, is pretty detailed. I'm going to read to you the official statement from the NBA about their rule. This is a direct NBA rule. Players, coaches, and trainers are to stand and line up in a dignified posture along the sidelines or on the foul line during the playing of the national anthem. Why do you think that requirement, which is more stringent than the NFL requirement, has not gotten anywhere near the amount of attention?
Because the media is completely rigged, and the truth and honesty and context and perspective just don't matter. And so the media is out to attack football and the NFL in particular, and they take any excuse to attack football and the NFL. And so they're just ignoring what is obvious, is that the NBA's had this same rule for several decades, and the NBA's just doing good business, the same thing the NFL is trying to do, but the media just doesn't care. They're just out to try to shame the NFL, try to destroy the NFL, and try to paint the NFL as racist.
All right. In general, do you think this story is going to go away, or are we going to have a third straight year of NFL-related anthem stories?
It's not going to go away because the media is unfair and is out to destroy football. And so any way they can keep this story going, I saw yesterday at some point someone interviewed Torrey Smith, and so there's just going to be story after story after story, this player, that player reacting. And then I think there's going to be some players that are going to protest.
Do you believe, as a report was out there, that there is a substantial number of players who will choose to sit out this season?
No.
Our friend, our good friend Sean King, who is regularly disseminating ridiculous and untrue information, but he reported that up to 25%, that's like 8 full league teams, could be sitting out over the Colin Kaepernick situation.
Yeah, he said the goal was to get 25%, and that's just silly and stupid. Do I think you're going to see a small smattering of players skip training camp or a few days of training camp and say it's in protest over Colin Kaepernick, yeah, I think you're going to see that. Do I think anybody is going to skip the season or sit out games over Colin Kaepernick? No, I'd be very shocked if anybody set out any games.
We're talking to Jason Whitlock. You can find him on Twitter at Whitlock Jason. You can go watch his show, Speak for Yourself, afternoons, evenings on FS1. So the story, big story from over the weekend, on Friday, ESPN announced that they were hiring back for like the third or fourth time or whatever it was, Keith Olbermann. I found this interesting because they said when Jemele Hill was hired that what she had said about Donald Trump, not hired, but when the controversy arose with Jemele Hill, they said that what she had said about Donald Trump, calling him a white supremacist, saying that most of his cabinet and also his supporters are white supremacists, was, quote, inappropriate. If you go look at Keith Olbermann's Twitter account, I don't think it surprises people out there. Olbermann became a very political person, and he became a political person from the left wing. And as a result, he had said all sorts of ridiculous, absurd attacks against Donald Trump, foremost among them that he was a Nazi, that he was a psychopath, that he was mentally unstable, that he needed to be impeached, that he was, I mean, basically every insult you can possibly imagine. These are all public on Twitter. A couple of things about this. If you were Jemele Hill, how do you think she should react? And two, what in the world is ESPN thinking hiring this guy when they said that what Jemele said was inappropriate and what Olbermann has done is much more inappropriate than what Jemele Hill did?
I think if I'm Jemele, I feel untouchable at ESPN because if they try to do anything to her, she's got a great lawsuit and she can point to the hiring of Keith Olbermann as a contradiction and, you know, just looks like her demotion from the six or the discipline they gave her and all that just seems really, really unfair. And so if I'm Jemele, I'm actually happy they hired Keith Olbermann because it makes me untouchable. ESPN doing this, I'm happy, to be quite honest, because I work at FS1 and I think they have clearly submit. If there were people trying to guess whether ESPN had taken a political side or people that didn't buy that ESPN had taken a political side, I think it's pretty hard to deny now that they have clearly chosen a political point of view, favor a political point of view. You got to remember just about Keith Olbermann and keep in mind, for the most part, I enjoyed Keith Olbermann as a broadcaster, as a sports broadcaster. But you got this guy's been hard to handle as well. I mean, there are legendary stories about Keith and not getting along with coworkers, being abusive towards coworkers, and so you just have that issue that they seem to get over pretty easily, and then to make this move, given his politics and what their organization has already gone through in terms of politics with this president, you know, I think they have clearly planted a flag and said to the sports fans who have a different political point of view, you know, we're not really for you.
And I look, we haven't talked a ton about Roseanne today, but I came on, I said, look, and we're going to get into this, how I think social media is driving everybody insane. I'm going to ask you about this alleged Colangelo story here in a minute. But what I said about Roseanne was, I think certainly that just like the NFL can make a decision that somebody is bad for their business, they can decide to cut bait with her. And I think what she said was stupid. I think nonsensical. I think she also at times is unhinged on Twitter. And I think you can say that about a lot of people. But if you compare it with Keith Olbermann, you got a Disney as a parent corporation making the decision to hire a guy who calls the president a Nazi psychopath and white supremacist and all these other insults. And then you fire Roseanne. It's hard for me to understand. And this has been my argument from the get-go. Rules are important because they set when they are applied fairly, they set expectations about what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. To me, it's hard to explain why Roseanne and Kurt Schilling get fired and why a guy like Keith Olbermann can get hired. What am I missing here, or do you see a difference of treatment? Again, I'm not defending what any of these people say. I'm just saying it seems like left-wingers can get away with saying a lot more things than right-wingers can.
There's probably some truth to that, but I would just say this as it relates to Roseanne, and I didn't comment on this over Twitter because I was trying to stay away from it. But I think Roseanne got exactly what she deserves. You know, I think what she said goes beyond just being stupid. It was racist. You know, Valerie Jarrett comparing her to an ape is just, there's just no way around it. It's racist. And it's unfair to ABC. It's unfair to her castmates on the television show, Roseanne. It's a selfish, racist act that you just sit there and go, what's the end game here? Why are you tweeting this out? And then you're trying to say it's a joke, and she's old enough to know that Twitter isn't a comedy house. I think everybody should have learned that by now, that no one or not enough people go on Twitter looking for jokes, and people don't understand jokes. And so I think what happened to Roseanne is exactly what should have happened. I compare it to Colin Kaepernick in a different sense. And again, I don't think Kaepernick, what Kaepernick did is quite as bad as Roseanne, but as it relates to just bad for business, and I keep trying to tell people that the NFL is just a TV show. And if you do things that hurt the television product and the ratings, a television show will get rid of you. That's what Colin Kaepernick did. That's what Roseanne did. They've both been eliminated from their television shows. This is capitalism and the market at work. If you hurt the bottom line, businesses will remove you. I don't, and I saw where some people, and I think you were bringing the Olbermann thing into it, and where I would say the difference between Olbermann and Roseanne is this: that President Trump plays rough with his political commentary. The guy, you know, went after President Obama pretty hard about where he was born. President Trump, in his history, and I think even maybe as president, has said some things that are impolite about other human beings and people. And so when you do that, you kind of invite people to say impolite things about you. And I'm not saying there's equality between some of President Trump's statements and how far Keith Olbermann has gone with his attack. Keith Olbermann is consumed with bitterness and hate and just goes too far. You know, he had a shtick when it was George W. Bush. And so now that President Trump's here, he's got to top how mean-spirited he was towards George W. Bush with President Trump. And that's how he lands on a Twitter feed that's using MF and Nazis and all this other stuff. But I'm not defending what Keith Olbermann did, but I'm a bit of a person that plays tackle football in terms of my public commentary. And so I don't get all that upset when people play tackle football back with me. I think I've legalized people to speak roughly about me because I speak a bit roughly as a public figure. And so that's what Valerie Jarrett is sitting at home minding her own business. I don't know much about her public commentary, but I just don't think she plays that rough with people. I would tend not to think. And so I just don't get where Roseanne was coming from at all. Keith Olbermann's wrong, but I get where he's coming from. He thinks, Donald Trump plays rough. I'm going to show you I can play rough. I'm going to call him every name. And the whole country and media is caught up in this, and it seems to be legalized. That everybody thinks that they label President Trump as hate, and people like Keith Olbermann and Jemele Hill think, oh, we're going to stop hate with more hate.
Yeah.
And it's just the most ridiculous thing in the world. But, you know, I get it. And so, I'll just say that Roseanne, to me, got exactly what she said. What she said, racist, stupid, selfish. I just think about how selfish it was for her castmates, that all the people she worked with, she's just put out of a job. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, hundreds of people. And the intent, I think, always matters. I don't see the intent as being particularly funny. I do think that the standard for what is acceptable discourse is different based on whether people agree or disagree with your politics. But I think in a larger context, what this is evidence of is people losing their mind on social media. And I know this is something that intrigues you. I'm assuming you have read by now the Ringer story that's out there about Colangelo and allegedly having burner accounts and everything else. And I got to give you credit. You have been out there for a long time arguing that social media is rigged, that it isn't an accurate reflection of the real world. I still find it unbelievable how many people are getting exposed. Kevin Durant, it happened to him. How many people are getting exposed having burner accounts? And for people out there who aren't familiar, this would be an account where you are using it different than your main account. Like, your main account on Twitter is at Whitlock Jason. I'm at Clay Travis. People know that to us. It would be if we had other accounts where we were regularly going on and spending time trying to make arguments from other accounts. Maybe I'm just too conceited. Maybe I got too big of an ego. I don't want somebody else to get credit for my words. So if I'm going to say it, I'm going to give it to my own name. Are you surprised by this? How common do you think it is? What should happen? Can the NBA investigate this? I think this is a pretty big story.
I'm going to have to apologize. I haven't read the story. I'll try to answer your question to the best of my ability and say that if he just has burner accounts, he's just scratching the surface of what's being done over Twitter and social media in terms of public figures, media figures, paying companies to control the kind of feedback they get over Twitter, paying for the kind of things that are said about them over Twitter, paying for people that disagree with them to be attacked on Twitter. There are people that have businesses built around, hey, I can manipulate how social media reacts to you and how they react to people who disagree with you, or how they, and so all of that is a part of Twitter. And Colangelo, to me, if all he did was create a bunch of burner accounts, yeah, he looks stupid. But if the guy's got any access to money, he should have just paid for what a lot of people, particularly I know the sports media world because I follow it closely, a lot of sports media people have paid very good money to have their accounts and the accounts of others manipulated, and the feedback that you get over social media. And it is certainly, Twitter for the last 8-10 years has certainly favored far left-wing commentary. And it's not by accident. And it's not, again, a lot of it is just bots that they've built into Twitter that if you happen to say something that doesn't agree with the far left, they've rigged it up in a way that you're going to get attacked and your bosses will see it and other journalists will see it and say, man, I don't want any of that. And so people are actually not being honest in their commentary because they fear a Twitter social media attack that they feel their bosses and or coworkers will react to. And so I just see a lot of public figures that everything that comes out of their mouth, they're thinking, well, how's this going to land on Twitter? What's going to be the reaction over social media? Therefore, let me not say what I really think. Let me say something that will cause a positive or no reaction over social media.
And this is where we're in agreement and where I think it becomes a big issue. If you have people artificially engaging with an artificial system, ultimately the marketplace of ideas doesn't work because people feel like it's broken because we don't have real debates. We have shadow debates. We have things that people say that aren't really true. And ultimately, I think that's how you end up with a guy like Donald Trump getting elected, because he's a disruptor and people feel like things need to be disrupted, even if they don't necessarily agree with a lot of what he's saying.
Thank you. You've just made the, and again, that's why I laugh at the people that think, oh, I'm so against Trump and we're in Trump, and they don't realize the role they're playing in creating the opportunity for someone like President Trump to be president, because people were crying out for something to disrupt this fascism and this silencing of dissent and real ideas and just factual information. Colin, this is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about the Colin Kaepernick situation, because I know the role Twitter is playing in convincing black people and black athletes that the NFL is racist. And it's all being controlled via Twitter. And it doesn't stand up to facts. And so it's like when I try to tell people, like, hey, hold your horses. Don't attack football. Football and the NFL is one of the great black success stories. No other industry has created as many black millionaires as the NFL. And this is the league we want to attack as racist? No other sport has helped more black boys like me move from poverty to the mainstream than football. And we want to attack football because of Colin Kaepernick and social media has us wound up that if you just attack the NFL, you'll get retweeted and likes and you'll look like you're the blackest person on the planet. You're Malcolm X if you attack the NFL. It's a joke. We're being baited into destroying an industry that has been awesome for us. And that's where my passion on this issue comes from, because social media is manipulating us into doing one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. And that doesn't mean everything that goes on in the NFL is the correct thing. But this whole thing of I'm boycotting the NFL, hey, I'm going to boycott the industry that has provided more wealth to black men than any other industry. I'm going to boycott that. It makes no sense.
I'm telling you, and I've been telling you, you need to write that as a book, because I think there's a lot of people who are going to respond to it in a positive way. We're talking to Jason Whitlock at Whitlock Jason on Twitter. And kind of the last question I want to hit you with as we head out, you were hitting on, I think, a lot of this this social media disrupting and everything else. What's the solution? I hear a lot from people who say, okay, it's easy to talk about problems. And I think that certainly, and I would say 21st century America, we probably spend more time talking about problems than solutions. What's the solution? What ideas could help?
The number one idea would be for executives of media companies to remove their talent and front-facing talent, writers, broadcast, remove them from Twitter. Just pass a rule, hey, you guys are off social media, and quit judging people off of Twitter. This is not intended as an attack on Bill Simmons, but I try to explain to people about what Twitter has done to Bill Simmons. And it's amazing. The guy was... His rise as a media personality, and I'm not defending his rise, but he was a disruptor, a non-PC, comedic writer personality. And then he got hooked up on Twitter and has become this social justice warrior, PC monster, and he's got 5 million, 6 million Twitter followers, but could only get 100,000 people to watch his television show. That should show you the disconnect between this fake cyber world and the real world. And so I'm not trying to attack Bill. I'm not trying to belittle him, but I'm just trying to say I'm watching someone sell out for social media approval, and it hasn't really helped his career. Now, it did help him land a mammoth contract with HBO and create the appearance that He was the authority on all sports topics and the greatest sports writer in the history of the world. But it hasn't been borne out by what went on with him at HBO, what's going on with him at The Ringer. It's an illusion. And if I'm an executive, I remove myself from the illusion and try to deal with reality. And if they could get their mind to, oh, so-and-so's got 400,000 Twitter followers or 1 million Twitter followers, that therefore means that America loves their point of view and they're popular. It's just not true. What it speaks to is they figured out a way to conduct themselves publicly in a way that gets you Twitter approval. That's not America. If that were true, if Twitter were some kind of real reflection of America, Hillary Clinton would have won in an overwhelming landslide. She would have made what Reagan did to Walter Mondale, if my memory is correct. She'd have made that look like it was nothing. But that's not the case. It's not a reflection of reality.
Outstanding stuff as always. Go follow him on Twitter at Whitlock Jason and go listen and watch the show Speak for Yourself on FS1. Always great.